This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Starting this Monday, May 17th, gay and lesbian couples will be able to apply for marriage licenses in Massachusetts. The 17th is the date the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court set for the legalization of same-sex marriage after intense debate among state legislators last year. And even that date may be in doubt. A judge in Boston will decide whether to impose a temporary restraining order on issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples later this week. And there are more complications. Governor Mitt Romney is holding firm on his policy directive that says only same-sex couples who live in Massachusetts or plan to move to the state can be issued a marriage license. The governor says a 1913 state law bars the marriage of two people in Massachusetts whose marriage would be illegal in the state where they reside. But the Board of Selectmen in the Cape Cod town of Provincetown plan to defy the governor. They've decided to allow their town clerk to grant marriage licenses to gay couples regardless of where they live. And there are other complications for same-sex couples looking to tie the knot in Massachusetts. The legal basis for gay marriage may be overturned in next year's legislative session, and the state's voters will get a chance to weigh in on the issue in 2006. Today, we'll be talking about the potentially bumpy road ahead for gay marriage in Massachusetts. If you have questions about how the state will accommodate newly married gay and lesbian couples, how the benefits bureaucracy needs to adjust, or about the mood in Provincetown, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now on the line is Keith Bergman. He's the town manager of Provincetown, Massachusetts. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So, Mr. Bergman, as the town's manager, you attend the Board of Selectmen meetings. Why did they decide to issue marriage licenses to people who say they don't intend to reside in Massachusetts in defiance of what Governor Romney was asking for?
Well, what the Board of Selectmen was voting to do was to affirm a policy that they had adopted in March earlier this year, which said that if a couple comes in and signs the form prescribed by the state and affirms thereon that they, under the pains and penalty of perjury, that there's no legal impediment to the marriage, that we'll allow the marriage license to be issued and we will not look behind that statement. That's consistent with the policy that the Massachusetts Department of Public Health has had in place since at least 1975, when they've been directing city and town clerks not to ask questions, not to go behind the oath. And we feel that if that's been good enough in recent decades, that now is no time for us to start becoming the marriage police and looking behind the oath and affidavit just because marriage is being extended to same-sex couples.
Right, but if they say under oath, look, I have no intention of coming to Massachusetts, then it's pretty clear that they're violating at least what the governor says is a requirement for becoming married, because the state law says that if your marriage isn't recognized by the state that you come from, that we can't marry you. So it seems as if in one sense they could know by just what's written on the paper whether the applicant is legitimate or not.
Well, we're respectfully disagreeing with the governor's interpretation to that effect. The governor has already gone so far as to say that the couple does not have to be residents of Massachusetts in order to get the license. What he said is that if they're not residents of Massachusetts, that they have to state their present intention to be residents of Massachusetts, and under that category they'd get the license. The Board of Selectmen, on the advice of our town council, whose firm represents almost half of the cities and towns in Massachusetts, indicates that there's room for another interpretation of the law. Frankly, the jury may still be out with respect to what the standing of the marriage in Massachusetts would be, whether it would be recognized or not elsewhere. And that it's not the job of a town clerk anywhere in Massachusetts to deny the opportunity for a same-sex couple to get the marriage. We do recognize, though, that it's an unsettled legal issue, and so part of the Board of Selectmen's policy is to put squarely before the applicants if they're out-of-state couples intending to reside outside of Massachusetts. So we want them to be aware that if they're issued a certificate of marriage, it's possible that the state may refuse to accept and record that completed certificate, and that if an impediment to marriage exists in their state, a substantial question exists as to whether the marriage will be legally recognized in Massachusetts or their state of residence, even if the certificate gets married. But our concern is that we don't want to be the ones to not issue the license. We fully expect there's going to be litigation that results either from issuing a license or failing to issue a license, and the Board of Selectmen is quite comfortable choosing to be on the side of that legal issue that they feel is legally correct.
Right, and how's your town clerk feeling about all this, since he or she's the one that's going to have to face the legal consequences, at least in the short run?
He is quite comfortable. We have a great town clerk in Provincetown. Douglas Johnstone is completely organized and ready to go. He fully supports the policy position of the Board of Selectmen and Town Council. We've got some 110 couples that are already pre-registered for getting marriage intentions in Provincetown in the coming days, and we're ready.
Really? Well, I was curious about that. So you've allowed people to pre-register? Are you expecting, Provincetown is known as a gay tourism mecca. Are you expecting long lines to start forming Monday morning?
Well, we are expecting long lines, and the lines will form around 8 o'clock in the morning, I should say. City of Cambridge, Massachusetts, did hold their hand up first and say that they'd like to open their city hall at 12:01. On the morning of May 17th, and we happily cede to them the honor of being the Dixville notch of same-sex marriage in Massachusetts, but we'll be open for business at 8 o'clock.
All right, you have the better of me on that one. What's the Dixville notch?
That's the first to vote in the election.
Ah, okay.
For the presidential election.
Got it. Sorry, probably I should have known that.
And we will be ready. We cannot accept... until the law, the ruling takes effect on May 17th, any marriage intention notices. But we have been receiving for months the inquiries from same-sex couples wanting to know what the procedures will be. In Provincetown, we have about 40 or so volunteers that will augment the 1.2 persons that we normally have in the town clerk's office.
Yes, 1.2. Spoken like an administrator, sir.
Yes, 1.2 full-time equivalent.
Right. So. Okay. Well, tell me a little bit about that. I mean, once the license is issued, is it straight to the altar, or does the clerk also perform marriage ceremonies?
Our town clerk does not. Some town clerks are also justices of the peace, which is what you would need or to be a minister in a denomination that would perform a same-sex ceremony. And there is a three-day waiting period in Massachusetts between the time that you file your marriage intentions and that you can get the marriage license. There is a procedure where you can get a waiver for that if you run to the court, which is about 40 minutes away from Provincetown. It's located in Orleans, and if someone can get up and back in the same day, that they could get their license. And we are expecting at least a few couples will try to go through that procedure so that there may actually be wedding ceremonies in Provincetown on May 17th if those folks are able to get the waivers.
Are you expecting any protesters at all?
We'll be ready. We've had protests in the past on various issues over the years, and we know how to handle them for the most part. The protests we've learned to ignore, and just keep on with business. The community is ready. We're very much about getting folks in to get their marriage intention forms and to get the marriage licenses issued, the form for high-tech capital, as Massachusetts like to think of itself as. You still have to fill out the form with a typewriter, so we pressed into service about a dozen typewriters that people donated that our volunteers will be filling out. A number of the restaurants and other businesses in town are open earlier than they normally would be for a seasonal tourist community that we are. One local establishment I'm aware of has about 17 weddings scheduled for this month and next for wedding receptions. And there's an awful lot of activity here, but I think people are choosing to come to Provincetown, even from, you know, if they're within Massachusetts or if they're second homeowners who reside at least part of the year in Provincetown in their second home, that they know that Provincetown is going to be a place that that welcomes their presence.
Well, let's go to our listeners and remind everybody that the number is 800-989-8255. First, let's go to Frank in Frederick, Maryland. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm just calling to ask how much he feels that the people of Massachusetts, either in his town or in the state in general, support either the court's decision or his city's more liberal interpretation of the court's decision. And because I feel like there's a lot of homophobia in the United States, and I just want to know if President Bush described it as activist judges, and if he supports that idea at all.
Okay, interesting question, Frank. What about that? Is Provincetown behind this, Mr. Bergman?
Oh, very much so. This is it's politically a pretty liberal community. One thinks of Cape Cod as historically as being rather a Republican bastion. I think there are one or two Republicans in town, and I'm married to one of them. My wife is a Republican, but the town is largely liberal, democratic, as is Massachusetts. Although the judges that made the decision were appointed by Republican governors of Massachusetts, and my sense is that by and large there's a lot of support in this community and throughout Massachusetts for the decision, that the more people that get to know, as we certainly do in Provincetown, that we get to know gay and lesbian folks as people, as individuals, the homophobia evaporates,
right.
And that it's a marvelous thing to see in this community and throughout Massachusetts. It's a part of the fabric of where we live. I'm delighted that my wife and I have raised two daughters here. It's a diverse place. They love it, it's a great community that is very supportive of everyone.
We're talking about Massachusetts and the state's plans to issue same-sex marriage license. Our number is here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email is totn@npr.org. When we come back from a short break, we'll speak with the chief legal counsel of Massachusetts, Governor Mitt Romney. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. We're talking about the legalization of gay marriage in Massachusetts, which begins on Monday, May 17th. Do you have questions about the legal issues that will come up for same-sex couples? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Well, Mr. Bergman, I just to finish, I gather that this is going to be something of a financial boon for your town. Is that not right?
Well, there is that. I haven't seen the spring quite as busy as it is this May. We are often very weather sensitive. Last May and June, it rained. It was an awful preseason. This year, it's already all the shops and many of the restaurants are open, and there's just the news media alone. about 40 news organizations have already announced that they'll be here.
Well, news organizations will fill up a town. And they eat a lot.
Right. We're looking forward to that.
Thanks for speaking with us, Mr. Bergman.
Thank you very much.
Keith Bergman is Provincetown's town manager, and he spoke to us from his office there. With us now from his office in Boston is Dan Winslow, chief legal counsel to Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
So, Mr. Winslow, can you outline precisely, so we're completely clear, what the governor's position is on what's going to happen Monday?
Sure, Joe. The governor has stated, since the Goodrich decision came down, that Massachusetts is obliged to follow the law. As you know, the governor is a staunch opponent of gay marriage. He's made that very clear, and yet he also recognizes as the chief executive of the Commonwealth that he has an obligation to follow the law. When we had justices of the peace announce that they were going to refuse to marry gay couples, I went and met with them, and I told them that if they couldn't uphold their oath and follow the law, that they should resign. Massachusetts has a law, because marriage is a function of state law. Massachusetts has a law that says if you are a non-resident and you don't intend to reside in Massachusetts, that you can't get married in Massachusetts if your own home state would not allow you to get married, that there's an impediment to your marriage in your home state.
Right, and I presume that was more things like age.
Up till now in Massachusetts, it's been age, consanguinity, and affinity, which is your relations by blood and marriage. That's the law of Massachusetts, and it's the laws of many other states. At this point, no other state in the nation allows gay marriage. In fact, the governor wrote to all of the governors and attorneys generals of all of the other states and said, listen, we've got this law on our books here, and it appears that your state does not allow same-sex marriage. We will not allow people from your state to be married. Tell us if we've gotten it wrong. And to this point, no other governor or attorney general has said anything different, that it appears that Massachusetts is, in fact, unique in the nation, and that only Massachusetts residents or people who intend to reside here lawfully can be married in a same-sex union. And so our concern is that we have a law, and it's everybody's duty in public life to follow the law. And I do respectfully disagree with Mr. Bergman, because he said that it's not the job of the town clerk to deny marriage. But in fact, the general laws in Massachusetts precisely invest the clerk with that role. And I think that the best example of that is in the Goodrich decision itself. The seven plaintiffs, the seven couples in Goodrich, applied for marriage licenses. They were denied marriage licenses because same-sex marriage at the time was not lawful in the Commonwealth. They sued, and we now have the Goodrich decision. We recognize that and respect that people have strong views about this topic. And we also recognize that there will be judicial forums and legislative forums, and certainly the man on the street who will have views about this. But at the clerk's level, the ministerial office in the towns and the cities, that's not the forum for the debate to occur. The clerk's office and the clerk's function deals with people's lives, their spouses, children, as well as the institution of marriage itself. The law in Massachusetts is very harsh, because what it provides is that if a party gets married in Massachusetts, contrary to the laws of their resident state, that the marriage is null and void. It's automatically null and void. The state's interest is in not having the institution of marriage in Massachusetts be null and void. We don't want Massachusetts marriage licenses to be worth less than the paper they're written on. It's important for the state. It's a value for the state to make sure that marriages in Massachusetts are not null and not void, and we look to the clerks of the cities and towns to follow the statutes to do that.
Okay. But the issue then becomes what they actually write down on their application, because as long as they say, I intend to come to live in Massachusetts, and I presume there's no time limit by which they have to fulfill that intention, they're free and clear.
Well, in the law in Massachusetts, Joe, is that a vague intention to do something in the indefinite future is not sufficient. There has to be a present intention to reside in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in the near future. For example, I may intend to retire to North Carolina someday, but that's not my intention to retire, not now, for purposes of the law. But the other part of it is this. Certainly for residence and intention to reside, the oath, the form itself is an oath. The Department of Public Health in the Commonwealth is recommending a best practice to ask for documentary proof in addition to the oath proof for residents, because we know that documents and, residence is usually susceptible of proof by a document, like a driver's license or a utility bill, something like that. And the reason for that, and the reason that that's important, is that down the road, if this marriage is, in fact, null and void, the marriage can be collaterally attacked. That is, if somebody wanted to leave the marriage, instead of getting divorced and having alimony obligations, they could just attack the marriage itself and say, well, you know what, the marriage was null and void from the get-go. So it's not just enough to look at the oath as to residence, although the statute says that's the minimum, and that is the minimum. But there's another piece to it, another twist to it.
Right.
The clerk has to satisfy himself or herself that there is no legal impediment to the marriage. Even if a person is willing to state under oath that there is no legal impediment in their home state to same-sex marriage, the clerk, all of the clerks in the state have been given a list of impediments for every state, and the list of impediments shows that same-sex marriage is an impediment. So a clerk under the law cannot be satisfied that there is no impediment to an out-of-state same-sex couple. And for that reason, no out-of-state same-sex couples who do not reside or intend to reside in Massachusetts can lawfully be married. And if for some reason they were to be married inappropriately by the clerk or licensed by the clerk, the marriage is automatically null and void.
I'd like to put in a question that's come from one of our listeners. Maren Patterson writes, my question comes from my concern as an officiant who performs same-sex marriages and spiritual unions in Minnesota. Will these couples, if they choose to move to Massachusetts, be able to bring documentation of their marriage ceremony or union to a public office and receive recognition as a married couple, or will they have to have a second wedding in Massachusetts?
People who live in Massachusetts and then decide subsequently to move out of state, what their rights are is going to be a topic.
No, these are people who've gotten married in Minnesota or have had a same-sex marriage performed, and then they move to Massachusetts. And their question is, do they then need to have a second marriage ceremony to be recognized in Massachusetts?
Minnesota does not allow civil marriage of same-sex couples. It may be that they had a commitment ceremony or a religious ceremony, but in terms of civil marriage, the legal institution of marriage, only Massachusetts allows same-sex marriage for Massachusetts residents or people who intend to reside here.
Okay, one other quick question from Jared, or a comment in Ann Arbor, Michigan. My partner and I have been considering getting married in Massachusetts in 2005, ever since the Massachusetts Supreme Court decreed it legal to do so. Now that the governor has put a stop to out-of-state residents getting married there, it's looking increasingly likely that we won't be having our wedding in Canada. Massachusetts will be losing out on tourism, wedding dollars, and millions of dollars from our fellow gay, lesbian couples who will move their weddings elsewhere. Is that something the governor is at all worried about?
Yeah, the governor's focus has been, Joe, to follow the law. You know, it doesn't matter whether we think it's a good law, a bad law. We don't have to like it. Certainly the governor did not like the Goodridge decision itself, and yet he feels that it is his duty to follow the law. So whether the statutes in Massachusetts are good or bad is a function for the legislative branch. Certainly there's arguments that can be brought to bear, but I think that correspondent has it right. He cannot properly come to Massachusetts and get married if he doesn't reside here or intend to reside here, and that's just the way it is. He certainly can petition his own state legislature, but the point is that people's representatives should have the voice in this. That's why we have that law, so that our justices in the Commonwealth can't impose our definition of marriage on other states. That's something that really has to depend on the state legislative process and the state judicial process in each of the other states so that we recognize and respect the laws of other states and the institution of marriage.
Mr. Winslow, thanks for speaking with us this
afternoon. Thanks, Joe, for having me.
Dan Winslow is the chief legal counsel to Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. He spoke to us from his office in the State House in Boston. When same-sex marriage becomes legal in Massachusetts in 5 days' time, there'll be plenty of celebrations. And after the ceremonies are over, gay couples will face complex questions about how their marriage will affect issues such as taxes, health insurance, and adopted children. Robert Webb is a partner in the law firm Nutter, McLennan & Fish, and he joins us from his office in Boston to sort some of this out. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Mr. Webb, you advise companies in Boston about employee benefits. Are employers putting into place policies that affect same-sex spouses?
They are. And in some cases, what they're doing is reconsidering domestic partner programs that have already been in place. In fact, that review that's ongoing with employers is producing some fairly ironic results. Just yesterday, a 6,000-member union here based in Boston elected to change their health benefit program to limit spousal benefits to opposite-sex spouses. So rather than extending spousal benefits to gay and lesbian employees, come Monday, should those union members, gay and lesbian union members, get married, they will not be able to give to their spouses the same health benefit rights that their heterosexual coworkers are able to provide to their spouses.
And even if marriage is legal in Massachusetts, they're allowed to do that?
Yes. The most benefit programs are regulated by federal law, a federal statute called the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, and that statute preempts or supersedes state laws to the extent that they relate to an employee benefit program. The statute doesn't preempt other federal laws, and so there's going to be an interesting line of cases, I suspect, developing where heterosexual employees who are denied domestic partner benefits that are extended to gay and lesbian employees are going to challenge those programs as being discriminatory based on their sex.
Well, we have a caller on the line who has an interesting question related to this. Ben, in Las Vegas, you're on the line, on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I think you just answered it, but as an employer, what rights under the law would you have to, say, refuse benefits to homosexual couples on the grounds that it goes against your religious beliefs or the beliefs of your company or whatever? Would you have any right to refuse benefits that you say provide to heterosexual couples?
I think that's an issue that private sector employers are wrestling with right now in Massachusetts, and I distinguish private sector from the public sector. I think Massachusetts state employees are going to, the gay and lesbian employees are going to be able to, should they marry, enjoy the same types of rights and benefits in the workplace that their heterosexual coworkers enjoy. In the private sector, though, I suspect that two things will happen. First, that companies that currently offer domestic partner benefits, and many of those companies, particularly the larger companies, do not limit it to gay and lesbian employees. They'll provide domestic partner benefits to heterosexual employees as well, so long as they can demonstrate that they're in an exclusive, long-term, and financially interdependent relationship. I suspect that there'll be a large number of employers that eliminate that program altogether because it will represent a significant cost savings. And I also suspect that many employers will define for their benefit programs spouse by reference to the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, because by doing so, they're not on their face discriminating against gay or lesbian employees, but in effect, what they'll be doing is limiting spousal benefits to heterosexual couples.
Ben, thanks very much for the call. I need to pause just briefly here to remind people that they're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Mr. Webb, there was a judge in Boston this morning who heard arguments from a conservative group that's asking for a temporary restraining order on preventing town clerks from issuing marriage licenses to gay couples. Do you have any idea where that stands and whether everything could be put on hold at this point?
Yes, Judge Toro, who's an excellent judge here at the U.S. District Court, very bright, very quick, and is considering that motion for a temporary restraining order, and he suspects that he'll be issuing a decision either tomorrow or Friday, and has put the plaintiffs in that case on notice that if the request is denied, that they'll have to be in a position to, if they choose to appeal, to do so immediately, because if the decision comes down Friday, they'll have less than one business day to seek review by the U.S. Court of Appeals here before the decision, the Goodrich decision, goes into effect on Monday.
Right. Most of these challenges have failed. Do you have any sense about how this one might come out?
Well, most people gave this a almost a DOA likelihood of success, that there was almost virtually no chance at all that the TRO would be entered. But the fact that Judge Toro didn't rule on it immediately upon hearing the arguments suggests that at least he has to wrestle with whether or not a TRO might be appropriate.
Right. Now, as I understand it, because the federal and state laws have different, there's different rules, and that same-sex marriages, well, I guess the federal government doesn't issue marriage licenses, but it's shown an indication that it's not going to accept same-sex marriage. You're going to have this situation where, for example, income tax, a state income tax, could be different from federal income tax. How are you advising people? What are the differences there?
Well, in the employment, there are lots of areas where the tax treatment will be different for state level and federal. Probably the most significant is going to be in the area of employment and employment compensation and benefits, because as soon as someone gets married, they're not going to be filing a tax return right away, but there will be a payroll cycle, one or two, in May after the marriages start taking place. And the principal difference will be in health insurance. Right now, a heterosexual married employee who's receiving health insurance through his or her employer, and if the employer pays a portion of the premium, which is fairly standard, then the employee would pay the balance. The employee gets to pay his or her portion on a pre-tax basis, and the premium paid by the employer is not included in the employee's taxable income, so they get the employer piece tax free, and that's both for federal and state. But if a gay or lesbian employee seeks to put his or her spouse on the company health plan, the portion of the employer premium that exceeds the value of individual coverage is going to be treated as taxable income to the employee. So even though they're not receiving any cash, they're going to be taxed on that benefit. And likewise, the portion that they pay, the employee pays for the coverage, is going to be will not be payable on a pre-tax basis to the extent that exceeds the value of individual coverage. Now, that's only
at
the state level. So you're going to have employers that are going to have to, for one employee, have two different sets of tax records.
This sounds like it's going to be a very complicated situation, but I thank you for trying to explain it to us today.
You're welcome.
Robert Webb is a partner in the law firm Nutter, McLennan & Fish. He spoke to us from his office in Boston. When we come back from a short break, the ladies who dress you down while dressing you up. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.